Next session number 13361, Mr. K. Lodge, Reel 12.
About what time of the year are we talking about now, Mr. Lodge, with your working in Halle and bombing raids and so on going on?
Yeah, well, this will be early in 1945, around about February and March. Now approaching now to the end of the war.
Could you sense in the Germans around you that they realized the war was really going against them?
Yeah. Boy, you could always sense that. And there was a lot of paper that I used to talk to that already had lost the war. You know, some people. But there was always got the odd one where there was thought there was always a chance that they would make peace, you see. One of our guards, Hans, they called him, he had a son fighting on the Russian front. And if you mentioned to him that Germany had lost the war, he wasn't so happy at all. He still didn't believe that Germany was going to lose the war, although the army, the forces were practically on the Germans' doorsteps.
Did you detect any dislike of Hitler, knowing, of course, he led them to what was now a disaster?
Now and again you would hear people say Hitler was no good and all this. But they were saying that then, but what did you see at the beginning of the war, you see?
What else was happening in Halle in that area at this time?
Well, at this time, Halle was being bombed for the first time in the war. And there was a big marshalling yards there, and they were getting bombed day and night. And every time we were working in Halle, you had to go down in the shelters of the areas. And you went down the shelters with the German population, you know. And one day I was down there, and it was very dark, you know, and you're walking, pushing past people. And I stood on somebody's toes, and he wasn't too happy about that. And the German gave me some abuse. Then we saw these area shelters zigzagged, and you had to find the one that was sort of empty, you know. And we found the one that was empty, and was it being cold and damp? I was marching up and down, stamping my feet to keep warm, you know. and I was like sort of whistling a march, you know, like just like marking time, you know. I never gave it a thought that actually what I was doing, my intention was just keeping warm, some of these Germans thought, in the next shelter, like, thought I was perpetuating the area, you see. that was hell on. We're going to get lynched, eh? And anyway, sort of quieting down. I mean, the guards told me, he says, you know, you just better sit yourself down there. I said, I didn't mean anything. I was only warm. My feet was freezing down in there. Anyway, it sort of got settled down, and I thought, it was my fault. Like, I thought, you know, I realized I wouldn't be so happy about it. And anyway, the area was over, and I came out and got back to work again. To working in the main streets.
You were never in any danger from anger from the Germans, because obviously they'd be suffering casualties with the air raids.
No, I was never in any we, I should say we, not me. We were never really in any danger, although, you know, they weren't happy about it, which you could understand. You know, the odd times, as I told you before, you got threatened with it. But it was just as you were passing. But at the same time, Britain was being bombed as well. And it's war, isn't it?
Did you have many fellow prisoners of war that had been prisoners for a lot longer than yourself in your own group?
Not the group I was in. Most of the chaps that I was with were paratroopers from Arnhem. I was the only DLI chap among our working party. All the rest was DLI and one or two Yorkshire regiments.
How did you keep your morale up?
Well, morale at that particular time was easy to keep up because the war was coming to an end. It wasn't like the chaps that was caught at the beginning of the war. See, they wouldn't know what was happening. But in my case, the war was coming to an end. The armed forces were in Germany, so what we were more or less expecting, you know, it wouldn't be long before it was over. You see, but that kept me all high.
You mentioned that you were getting Red Cross parcels. How about mail from home? Was that coming through?
I never got a letter from home. Although they were sent, I never once got a letter from home. And my mother actually received one or two letters from myself, but I never got a letter from home. There was only odd ones did.
As the war was coming to an end for you, did the food situation get worse? How was your food comparing with the German food that you were obviously seeing in the shops or seeing people eating?
Well, the food what we got never got any worse, because I don't think it could have gotten any worse. There was no change. It was just the same. Just this one meal of swilled deer. And it was about a loaf and a half of bread a week, each man. And that was it. I mean, you didn't even have a knife and fork. The only thing you had was a spoon. And you had to make your own cup out of an old tin. Just like that.
Were you able to overcome the boredom? That's obviously when you finished working, what was it to do?
Well, we had used to read books. There were a lot of reading. We got books from the Red Cross. Most of them was American books. And we used to just sit and read, or we hadn't any games to play, or just made your own entertainment. And usually you're that tired, you went to bed, and because it wasn't long, you're up the following morning at 6 o'clock.
Did the difficulties of living the life of a prisoner of war and the tensions and the worries, etc., did that make for outbursts of anger amongst each of you, amongst yourselves and your friends?
No.
Things being blown up?
No. What I found was there was never any real trouble among yourselves. Everybody sort of mucked in, you know, and you got on well, and that everybody had his own rations, and he kept his own rations, and everybody was happy that way, right? I remember once exchanging cigarettes for a fresh egg of our foreman, and I had this fresh egg scrambled on toast, and it was absolutely marvellous. And you wouldn't believe, through having some decent food, I felt a different person. You know, just through having something that wasn't rotten, I should say. Yes. It was good. I always remember how different I felt with that scrambled egg on toast. And I was envying the rest of the chaps.
Well, little things like that had a tremendous meaning for you.
Yeah. But they were very rare. Very rare. I think that was the only egg I ever had while I was prisoner.
What happened to you next?
Wells just carried on working in this, and then till one day, we're working outside. It was a lovely spring day, and in the far distance, we could hear artillery firing. And these two German in charge of two foremen, Mr. Keough and Mr. Schmidt. And we could hear this artillery. Then it stopped. And then a bit later, they opened up again, but it was nearer this time. This would be German artillery. And they must have come back, you see. And then he stood up for the foreman. Now he got a bit worried. And he told our guard. He said, I think we better wrap up and take them back to the camp. Which he did do. They were getting a bit worried. And we went back to the camp. And then later on that night, there was all sorts of rumours going around. The Americans was just down the road and all this, you know. But there were only rumours. And then we didn't go to work the next day. And the guards come in and told her to pack up our gear. We were moving out. But during this march, I think they were marching over to Leipzig and that way, and we joined this march. There was a few hundred on the road. I don't know how many different peoples, Indians and different nationalities, and we were all on this road. And we were walking along the road, and we could actually hear once or twice small arms firing. And we thought, well, oh, what's on here? Maybe you better hang back. And we started to hang back. And the German guards weren't bothered at all because their intentions was to desert. And I remember there was a German officer came along in a car and he stopped and he told the guards to get a move on. We were lagging behind and would catch the others up. And the German guards told him that we were, there's a lot of us was crank, was just sick. And they said a few words, then the German officer went on his way. And then we just sort of hung back, and the German guards said, if you want to go, that was your chance. Because the guards couldn't care less. And we took off. We ran away down at the woods. And we were hid in the woods for a while.
This was the first day of your march.
Right. We were hid in the woods. And then I remember I was hiding. This German woman came along carrying bundles of sticks. And she saw me, and she was telling me that she had seen the prisoners walking up the road, just telling me, you better get yourself up there, you know, all this. And I said, get lost, but anyway, we hid in the wood. And then the following day, because we didn't know exactly where we were and what we were going to do, but the following day the Americans started to shell the wood because they wouldn't know we were in there, but we come under American shell fire. They were shelling the wood. I said, oh God. And then it did not ceased, and then it got dark, and then just lay on the grass. In about 2 or 3 o'clock in the morning, I woke up and I was frozen to the ground. Well, there's a huge white frost covered the ground, and I had slept, and I couldn't even move. I tried to get my legs going. Had a German patrol come along, but that particular time would have been a fair catch. And I The others was the same, you know, but there was some of them that were up, they were walking about. Like, and anyway, I managed to get the circulation back and get back onto my feet. But the whole ground was white. And so eventually we got ourselves sorted out. And it was quiet, like. And then there was a battle started. Because just down the road to the left, there was a village. And the Germans were in the village, you see. And there was a battle started. I said, oh, here's the Americans. We want to push through here. And then this battle lasted for about 4 or 5 hours. And then I saw the Germans pulling out. They were coming up the road and they were going across the fields. And then it went quiet. And we thought, well, what are we going to do? You know, make a move, or might get caught, or what are we going to do now? So we waited till it got dark. And there was we just sat tight, and there was this corporal with another chap. They went away out to see if they could make contact with anybody. They went down to the village, and they were away about an hour, and they came back, and they said they hadn't seen a soul. There was nobody in the village at all. There was no Americans in there, and nothing. So we decided to go down to the village. Stop down there. We go down there, and we go to this barn, this farm. We went to this barn, and we slept in the barn. And then when morning came, we got up, and the farmer was milking the cows, and he never said a word. And we drank most of his milk, and he never said a word. And we could hear some moaning on this road, like tracks, vehicles. And we went along to the road, and here's the money that's come along in a jeep. And they stopped, and we told them we were prisoners, and asked them for cigarettes. And strangely enough, they hadn't any cigarettes on them. They said they'd been moving that fast, they were like fighting on a leg on another corridor. So they'd been moving up that quick. The Russians hadn't been keeping up with them. And he said, if you walk back a couple of miles, there's the echelon down there. He says they'll fix you up with somebody eating that, you know. And then so that was good, and we started to walk back. You know, in this village had been a lot of forced labour people. And now we're all free. And they were ransacking the village. They were just going into the house in the little shops. They were getting out all the stuff, and the German civilians was just standing watching them and didn't see anything. And you could just help yourself, and it was great. Now we walked down the road, and we come to this American echelon, and they gave us some care rations. We just sat and talked to them.
How many was it of you that ran away that night?
42 of us, the whole working commando.
You all ran the wood?
Aye. Yeah.
What were your feelings when you actually saw the Americans and spoke to them? What were your feelings? How did you feel about that?
Oh, great, you know, top of the world, you know, bro, it's it, free, you know, great. I mean, you know, nice to see somebody on your side.
How did they receive you? I know you said that you went back and you had rations. But were they interested in what
you were doing? Ah, yes, they were. Yes, that's how long we'd been in prison, and what we were doing, and that, you know, And then they arranged some transport for us, and they took me to this German town. I don't know what the name of the German town was, but we're housed in the German barracks.
Were the prisoners there when you got there?
There was some. They would come in all the time from different areas.
Did they, obviously they do take name, rank, or some kind of information from you?
The Americans? Oh, no, they never bothered about who you were, and that, you know. They, no, they were just prisoners, they never bothered.
So what happened next after you'd been in the barracks?
Well, we're in these German barracks, and you could go out in the town. You can walk in anybody's house. And then they went to town, they got these German barbers. And they had about, half dozen barbers who opened the camp and gave everybody a free haircut and a shave. And making them work. And there were some houses just beside this barracks, and the Germans, they were putting notices up on the houses, plundering verboten, which is plundering forbidden. You weren't allowed in. Like, there's a door check, and he notice of that. If you want anything and you don't get it, he says, just come and tell us. We'll take it off them. I remember going into this house. There was a German woman in there. She told us to get out. And we just ignored her. And the chaps were taking stuff off the walls. I remember she had this one house. The chap got two rapiers hanging on the wall, dueling pistols, different things, going through the drawers. Well, I still got a German arm banner. I actually took out the drawer. And then went down into the cellar, because we knew that's where the Germans hid all the grub. You used to have a lot of this stuff, what they pick up, you know. They fruit and all this type of thing. They go down there, sawing all out. There was an old man come down and he saw what we were doing, and he's trying his eyes out. And I felt sorry for him. I said, oh, keep it. And I walked out, and I said, come on, I'm going to go. And then we came back out. And
this was on a large scale, this kind of looting.
Oh, yes. All right. Because Germans were the enemy, you see. And we had no pity for them at all. And the Americans, I think they're seen to be the worst of anybody for that. They would stop a man on the street and take his wristwatch off him. Or anything like that. And there was just down the road, there was a school or a big school yard. There was about a few hundred German prisoners just standing in this yard. And right in the middle was a big American half track with, and there was a couple of Americans sitting behind a machine going, these Germans. And they're all just standing there, subdued. I knew how they were feeling. Anyway, we stopped in these barracks for just a day or two. Didn't seem that long, a few days. And then they got American transport to take us to this aerodrome. We were being flown home.
Do you recall which aerodrome this was?
I haven't a clue where we're at. These took us somewhere, and I haven't a clue. I wish I'd known the names of these places.
Had you been told you were going home?
Well, we hadn't actually been told we were going home, but we sort of got that feeling. See? And I remember when we were taking the way towards this aerodrome, and this American truck, and we're going along the road, and there was a German knocked out vehicle on this road, and there were some German kids playing, and there was scattering stuff all over the road. And this American truck we were in, he came along, and it's strange enough, as he went past this car, which had been knocked out, he got a blowout. Now, he blamed the German kids, Well, I don't know whether it was tuned up, but he was absolutely raging, this American driver. And he gets himself out, and he had a whip behind his seat. You know, these, like, everybody can look somewhere like a bullwhip to me. And he was cursing the Germans, the kids. By then, these kids had run away, and there's sort of like farmland, and the father and the mother was standing there. And he went over with his whip, and he says, "Oh, he's going to flog these kids with his whip." They ran round this hutch, and he chased them around. He chased them around his other way. He was just sitting, watching them, and they were screaming. There must have been the father. He must have said something, and the American got a hold of him. I don't know what he said to him, but he must have threatened him. And then he come back, and he was cursing him. I'm not going to tell you the exact words he said. Like, anyway, he changed the wheel, and all the time he was changing the wheel, he was cursing the Germans. And then he got all, and he said, "Damn it," he says, "I'll go back and I'll flog them again." And he went back again, and he had another go at him. And then he come back, and he threw his whip into the car, and he then rode away. And we went to this aerodrome. There's a lot of German planes on the aerodrome, which had been destroyed. And I was just going around trying them out, sitting in these Bessersmiths and trying what it looked like in a Stoker. And the next day, they were flown out, and these American decoders.
How did you take to the sudden increase of good food after the poor time you'd had? Did your stomach suffer in any way, your health?
No, I didn't. No, I sort of adapted to it quite well. They didn't, when we got back home, they didn't let her out. And I think they just sort of fed her gradually, you know. When we landed, we got a cup of tea.
Where did you land?
It was, I can't even remember. I think it was down in Buckinghamshire, somewhere around there. I don't even know the name of the place. What I do remember when we got back to England was how sweet the country smelled. You could smell the scent. I don't know whether it was apple blossom or what, but after being used to the stench back in Germany, and England smelled absolutely beautiful. And we were in. Well, I was telling you, when we got off the plane at this aerodrome, they were standing with these delousing guns, and they were giving us. Who was squirting in our uniforms in case there was any lice.
That's how you got off when you got off?
When we got off the plane. They were standing there with these guns and they were squirting like this.